Broadcasting from high atop the Pallet Tribune headquarters in Celadon City, this is WTPT Pokemon Radio. Welcome to another make-believe episode of WTPT. I am Joey, and I'm not really here. You're just imagining this.
I'm KC, and I am the one who is imagining Joey right now into existence.
And you, the listener, are imagining KC into existence, imagining me into existence.
And thinking, therefore, M-ing. René Descartes.
I know, your mind is blown now.
It is all over the floor.
Now that we've opened everyone's eyes, we've prepared you to talk about our topic this evening. But first, the news. Yes, we're here to talk to you this evening about, or, yeah, you know the whole deal.
Whenever you're listening. Our topic tonight.
Yeah. is legendary Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
And, We'll get into that a little bit more later, but we have some interesting news to go over. First off, there were three new mystery dungeon games announced for WiiWare. There's a scan floating around on Japanese image boards that shows the three new mystery dungeon games coming out. The titles are supposed to be Press On, Flame Adventure Squad, Let's Go, Storm Adventure Squad, and Go For It, Light Adventure Squad. And there's really no other information on them yet, but it seems pretty rumorific still, but it's, you know, it's still a scam.
The one that got the picture that's taken from like a McDonald's placemat or something? I heard a rumor about a week or two ago where someone made, you know, someone said they knew these games couldn't, because like basically they saw the McDonald's promotional material with the three games listed on it.
I think that might be it. It says here a magazine scan, but it doesn't specify which magazine, so I'm not sure. But, well, it's still listed as in the rumor category, but I think it's likely that it's real.
Yeah, it's likely to come out. Surprisingly, who
would make up something like a mystery dungeon game?
Yes.
Like, if they're going to make something up, it's going to be like a fake Pokemon.
Yeah, fake Pokemon, or like, another fake game is coming out, you know. But it is interesting that they're releasing three of these mystery dungeons this time.
I'm really curious about the graphics for them. I wonder what they're doing with that. Maybe it'll be like what do they call those games? Like choose your own adventure type of games?
Oh, okay. That'd be like the text adventure type games.
Text adventures, yeah. Maybe.
And these, you said it's WiiWare?
It's WiiWare. So
that's interesting, because then you'll have to choose, like, on your little WiiWare menu, which one? Will they be three separate titles on there? Will you pick it? And then, like, when you download it, will it ask you which version? Or I don't know. It's kind of curious to me, like, because then I could see people accidentally downloading all, unless they're making them different enough that you would want to download all
maybe,
three.
Maybe it's like almost like episodes or something.
Yeah, you know, episodic content is very popular on WiiWare lately. I just not only have been playing those Strong Bad games that episode, I just downloaded Final Fantasy IV: The After Years for WiiWare.
Oh, cool! How is that?
It is really cool so far. Like, it is so nostalgic, yet not like, oh, here's a character in your face that you thought was dead or something. It's like just subtle things where, like, how the very intro scene is an airship flying with the exact same music intro as the first Final Fantasy IV. And it's just like, you're there. All the sound effects, all the music is just exactly the same. And it's just a whole new adventure. It's really fun. So episodic content, even though this is all one package, it used to be five cell phone games.
Oh, I see.
And they combined them all into one. For WiiWare, but this kind of thing is like, you know, catching on with WiiWare, and I think it's kind of, it works there.
Awesome.
So that's a good thought, that's episodic there.
All right, what else is there? You had something to bring
up? Yeah, I think this is kind of interesting little video uploaded, some Japanese show about the adventures of
Pokemon Sunday, I think it is.
I think it's Pokemon Sunday, but the way this article mentioned, it just says like it's the adventures of Notch Deer Pikachu. But it might be. I think it's part of Pokemon Sunday, but I could be wrong. I could be getting all my costume Pokemon Japanese shows mixed up. Who knows? But they showed a video of Soul Silver, what's Gold something?
Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
Yeah, Arceus. That's the big kicker in this. That is the Arceus being a plot point in here, which is not where I expected him to show up.
So it's a plot point? It's not necessarily like one of those events that you have to unlock with an item?
I think it is. You have to get the Pichu from the Notch Deer Pichu, I think. Let's see. Yeah, and that's what will... Yeah, the Notch Deer Pichu will join your team once you have traded over into your game the Pikachu-colored Pichu. That's what you get from, like, the movie. It's called the Pikachu-colored Pichu. And then it knows some moves, and so then you can have access to the Shinto Ruins, which is a hidden location. They don't know exactly where it is yet, but it's snowing, and so people think it's either Mount Silver or Mount Coronet. And somehow or another, Arceus is, like, in your party in this plot, where, like, he's following you. Like you know how, like, Pikachu was following you in Pokemon Yellow?
Yeah.
Arceus is just, like, walking behind them, it looks like, in this video, and they take him, and apparently, like, he lets you choose one of the three, Giratina, Palkia, or Dialga, to create. He's basically like, let me do you a solid. And he creates one of those three for you, and they join your party as a level one Pokemon.
That's interesting. So you're not getting Arceus in that event. You're just getting...
I think so. It does not say anything about Palkia or him joining you permanently, because I just see him following you. I think he's just with you. I don't think he's like, yeah, actually. But I, of course, could be mistaken. It's not totally translated. But just the fact that he's in this alone is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Like, I was not expecting him to put him in a remake of an older game.
Right,
you know,
right,
that's
exactly.
Totally... out there. And so, yeah, also very interesting to get a level one. I mean, they've been doing this once or twice now with, like, the level one Regigigas.
Yeah.
That you're giving us legendaries at level one so we could actually, like, play with them from the start, I guess, if you wanted to.
Right.
Even though they're probably still overpowered. It's just like, you know, if you actually want to use them in your regular gameplay, he doesn't have to be level 100 and only gotten, you know, only usable really by someone who's beaten the game already and has all the badges.
Interesting.
So that's just kind of cool.
Right.
Oh, and I thought this was only a minor note, but I thought this was big, that the battle music sounded very different, and I'm happy. It might just be an updated and, like, remixed slightly that I'm not noticing it, just on, like, the computer video, but if it's an update, if it's a change of the song, I'm going to be ecstatic, because I'm kind of tired of the battle music.
Yeah.
And if they change that at all, I'll be a happy little trainer.
I wish they would just, like, use, like, one random battle music out of, like, if they had, like, a pool of 10 things of battle music and it just randomly chose one.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Or, like, based it on, like, you know, like, most RPGs, like, just based it on, like, your location. Like, there should be the forest battle, there should be cave battle, all that kind of junk.
Oh. Yeah. All right. One kind of internal announcement. Our second anniversary is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And we are having a huge party/event.
Extravaganza!
It's funny. I was talking to... first of all, let me say the name of it. It's called TPT Day, the entire event.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to Justin the other day, and we realized we were planning all these different events for it. We compared it to, like, a video gaming convention, and we have all of the main, like, draws of a convention, but it's... online. And so there's a number of different things to doing, different tournaments, different competitions, different giveaways, a listening party for our second anniversary podcast.
So we're gonna hold panels.
Yeah,
basically, a live show. Yeah,
well, basically that's what we're doing. Yeah. One of the other things we're doing is having our staffers broadcast live from our live video stream for various segments throughout the day.
Great.
So there are your panels right there. And I'm giving a keynote presentation about some of the future things that we have going on for the site.
TPT 3GS will now have.
Yes, 3GS. We have tons of stuff going on. Check, like, I just posted an icon on the front page that you could click on for some of the info about it, and there's a whole lot more even than that coming. So I hope you all are looking forward to it, because
awesome.
I certainly am.
Very cool.
All right. Was there any other actual news before we dive right in?
I can't think of anything offhand, so that sounds... I guess I might as well mention it, just because we went over some news, is that one of the stories I just posted, they had a nice little interesting article on Reason Online, which kind of sounds like basically skeptical... Like, it's kind of like the skeptics website. I used to read a magazine called Skeptical Inquirer, and they used to like debunk everyone who like would say they knew magic or something weird, Kevin. Anyway, they had a list of 40 most, Forty most absurd Time magazine cover stories, and number three, I believe, was their issue on Pokemon, which they referred to as like "Beware the Pokemania," which will basically brainwash our children. And
it's funny if you look at the cover on our main page. It's kind of funny how they used Poliwhirl, which is like a really like not He's one not of the most main, prominent Pokemon. Yeah. In the middle of it, because it has like, you know, like a helix double, like
a hypno helix.
Yeah, like a Twilight Zone type of thing in the middle of it. So so it's saying how it's hypnotizing our children. And,
bah, and they are stabbing and shooting each other for cards or something like
that.
Did
they like Photoshop like devil horns and like...
you know, they might, they might. So anyway, yeah, it's fun. And the other things on the list are equally kind of absurd, but... so anyway, check it out, and that's all we got for now.
All right,
let's dive on in.
Let's dive.
So we're talking about the legendary Pokemon, and we've done an episode a while back about the myths, and we kind of talked a little bit about legendaries. It was kind of a legendary slash myth episode, but it was more about just like the myths and whatever.
Yeah, it was. I think it was focused mainly on. We didn't realize this at the time, but we focused mainly on the myths of the Sinnoh region.
Yeah.
And today we're not going to be going into legend myths yet. We're probably going to do that on another episode about myths. But today we're going to be going through the legendary Pokemon themselves and talking a little bit about each of their origins and what they represent in the Pokemon world.
And, you know, just to talk about what is a legendary Pokemon is in of itself.
That's an interesting question. Yeah, and it's kind of fuzzy, too.
Right. I mean, it seems to me the only thing that really defines a legendary is something that's, like, very elusive. There's either one or very few of it around.
Mm-hmm.
It usually can't breed. Mm-hmm. The only exception is the half exception of Manaphy.
Right.
Yeah, so they can't breed. And they usually just have some sort of major power or some sort of responsibility of the universe in the plot, usually.
Right.
They always have something to do with, like, you know, either the creation or maybe just maintaining the forests or something of that epic nature. And like they do say, like, you know, like the descriptions of them on sites would say, like, they are usually extremely powerful. That's not even the case necessarily always. Some of the
legendary Pokemon aren't like that. I mean, in general, as a group, I would say they're more powerful than most of the other Pokemon, but some of them are just kind of average stat-wise.
Yeah, you know, some are a little better, a little, you know, average, but yeah. So I guess the only way to go further is to just kind of like pick out every game had its own series of legends.
Right.
And so we're going to kind of just go down through them, through the generations of legends, and kind of discuss what, you know, these guys did and what they were.
And there are 35 various legendary Pokemon.
Mm. And then, like, there's also the ones they count as like pseudo legends, I guess. Like the ones that are just like regular Pokemon, but either because of stats or just because of storyline. Like, you know, Dragonite is considered by some... He's described in the Pokedex legendary, but he's not...
I think that's Arcanine or...
Arcanine, too, is called the legendary Pokemon.
Okay.
But, like, you know, like some people, like, you know, just like in the Pokedex will say this legendary, blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but
so there are some pseudo-legendaries, but we might mention them briefly, but right now we're focusing on, like, the ones that are in a class all their own, and most of them, or all of them, might be banned from actual tournament play.
Yeah, I think that is correct. So everyone who's played from the very beginning, the very first legends that they may have encountered or caught were the legendary birds.
Right, from Generation 1.
That's correct. Articuno, Zapdos, Moltres.
Yep.
And the name scheme was good.
They kind of weren't as clearly defined as something that is the deity of like a certain like force of nature or something like that. They were more. It was kind of more fuzzy back then. Back in the day, I don't think they fully realized what they wanted the legendary Pokemon to represent. So some of the themes of these are repeated later on. Like, for example, Articuno is the legendary bird of ice, and it represents, like, if you could push it, maybe something about weather, but also the trio from the third generation also kind of represents weather effects in some ways.
And the legendary birds, their sort of like a deification story was they were supposed to keep the balance, as evident, like, in the second movie, between their three elements, and when that goes out of sync... Just chaos ensues and the world goes crazy.
Right.
It was kind of interesting because I don't think this was planned at the time, but eventually all the, like, legendary trios eventually got, like, a leader or, like, a master. And for this three, it was Lugia.
Right, even Lugia is especially prominent in, what was it, the second movie?
Yeah, Pokemon 2000.
Right.
Yeah.
Lugia is supposed to be the leader of this trio, which is interesting. Which is, I think, something they thought about later.
Yeah, that was just like something.
It wasn't even something that was very prominent in the video games, I don't think. I don't remember that even being mentioned once, but I could be wrong.
I hear in the video game, Lugia and Ho-Oh both created their trio.
Ho-Oh
made the bestial trio, I'll call them, because I forget what they're...
The legendary beasts. Yeah,
legendary beasts. And yes, Lugia made these three birds. They both used to live on top of towers, Lugia and Ho-Oh. There was like bronze...
There was the tin tower I know Ho-Oh's on, but I forget what the other one
was. I think it was either bronze or brass. And when those were destroyed... Lugia decided, oh, I'm going to the bottom of the ocean and hope nobody bothers me. And when these guys started fighting in the movie, that's what kind of woke him up and he had to take action. And, you know, but it's kind of interesting because there's more than one of these guys we know. These three are ones we don't see very often. You could almost think there's only one. But we've gotten very, I feel this rather definitive of... aspects that there's more than one, as in one of the characters in the anime, Noland, he actually catches an Articuno and uses it nonchalantly in battle.
Right.
And I don't think that could be the same one as the movie, because if it was gone, the balance would be all crazy.
Right, exactly. You know? So that pretty much proves... And this is kind of not really touched upon in the video games much. They kind of avoid this. But in the anime, it's pretty clear now that there are legendary Pokemon that... you know, that have children and whatnot. Yeah. So it's an interesting contradiction.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's interesting that not all legendary Pokemon are completely unique. Let's put it this way. They don't breed for trainers.
Yeah, that's the way. They don't breed in captivity.
Right.
Like some actual animals in real life don't.
Right.
Like, you know, like there's some pandas that... they just can't get them to breed in captivity. They got to be in the wild, and you know. So yeah, that's an interesting point.
So apparently, Articuno is supposed to be based, or the Pokemon's appearance is supposed to be based on the Arabic Anka myth, which is that of a giant Arctic bird. And the bird is similar to the phoenix, as it's known to resurrect itself and appear to doomed people in the mountains.
Interesting, because then we also have Moltres, which is also a phoenix kind of
bird,
which I also love. My first time I ever saw him in the anime is when he shows up to basically light the Olympic torch.
Right, that's pretty sweet.
Of the Pokemon games. I gotta remember if, like, do they, like, know he comes? Does he, like, always come to those games, or was it just, like, some, like, freak thing that happened one year? That's so long ago. But, you know, the other thing was that all three of these guys... Did Zapdos ever show up in the anime that you saw?
Not that I could remember, but... He's definitely showed up in the anime a couple times. But Zapdos is interesting, too, because he's based on a Native American legend of the Thunderbird.
Quetzalcoatl, or just Kotal or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. You know, they didn't mention the name in this article, but...
I'm familiar with, in a lot of games, like Final Fantasies, you could summon an electric bird called Quetzalcoatl, and it's like an Aztec lightning god bird. Huh. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the one he's based off of. And, you know, that's the thing I sort of realized as I went through these. All of these legends come from some kind of myth or some... Like, or a good majority of them come from some actual, like, legend or god story, which makes me believe that even if these things aren't, like, the deities of this world, they're almost like the gods of, like, Greek myth, where there's just, like, lots of them. They, you know, they have kids, and they just do their thing, depending on, like, I'm the goddess of love, and I take care of that aspect of the world. So it's kind of like that, where they, like, they interact with humans. There's more than a few of them. They breed. They, you know, they're fallible. But
well, like you said, yeah, Moltres is based on the phoenix, but it because Ho-Oh is also based on a phoenix in some ways. So, but I think the difference is Moltres is more based on the phoenix of Arabic legend, whereas Ho-Oh is based on the phoenix of like.
Yeah,
maybe like
Western civilization, like Roman.
Well, I think actually more like Eastern, because like it more represents the sun and rainbow and all that sort of thing. So, we'll get into Ho-Oh a bit later, but Moltres is like a firebird, obviously, and it's also others claim that the bird is based on the Japanese mythical bird known as Suzaku.
Oh, Suzaku, yes.
The guardian of the south, and that's not necessarily a true phoenix. Maybe that's the difference between the two.
Suzaku was the boss of Final Fantasy Adventure 1.
Of what?
Final Fantasy Adventure 1 for Game Boy. Suzaku was like a major boss that you had to like, he was destroying a whole city and you had to chase him around. Just kind of interesting to hear that name again.
So Generation 1 had the smallest number of actual legendaries. Because, you know, catchable in-game, there's only four. And the last one is Mewtwo, which is obviously like a genetically engineered clone of Mew.
Mm-hmm.
And Mewtwo is... pretty much confirmed to be unique. Like, he's the only one. They didn't. Yes. Team Rocket and Giovanni didn't make several of them. They only made one.
Yes. So he is, like...
It's kind of ironic. Mewtwo is one.
Oh, that's deep. Mewtwo is probably the least likely one that's ever, like, made off of a religion. So he is just a... I guess he's kind of like the anti-religious. He was created, not made. And he... But he was, you know, made from the DNA of Mew, which is kind of like the first real, like, uber legend, I guess I'll call it. Like, he was the one that, like, no one could get, you know, like, everyone wanted and knows all the stories about. And I feel what's interesting about the fact, like, the Mew and Mewtwo is that they say Mew has the DNA of all Pokemon in him.
Right.
And that's what allows him to transform into... At least in the anime, he doesn't have like Ditto's move, but in the anime, he transforms into any Pokemon he wants. That's because he has any DNA he wants in him. But Mewtwo doesn't seem to do that. He doesn't. I don't know if he has the power and just doesn't use it. Maybe he thinks.
I don't think he does. But anyway, but yeah, it's interesting because like Mew. What do they say about him that? Well, first off, we pretty much know that Mew's not completely unique because there's different ones that appear in different movies. And also, I remember reading something about the fact that, along the lines of what you said, he has the DNA of every single Pokemon in it, but he's something like, not necessarily the first Pokemon ever, but like the first something. I'm trying to find it here.
Some people said that he was the origin of the others.
Right, the origin of...
Of other Pokemon, but I feel like that's something that was written at the time, but is contradicted
to Arceus.
Yeah, so it's kind of, but you know, here's the thing though, and this might be jumping ahead a little bit too much, but he does look a lot like the Lake Trio. You know, like they all have that cat-like look to them, even though like those trio were said to have come from one egg made by Arceus. Mew still looks like, you know, him there. And, you know, it's kind of... this might just have been a translation mistake, but there was a version of the game where these researchers you find mentioned they found Mew, and he had just given birth. And he had given birth possibly to another Mew.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, these are all just, like, questions of, like, you know, was it a mistake? Does this really happen? This is the problem with, like, following the, you know, the lore of a video game where there's so many variables like that. But my personal theory is I would feel like, you know, it could be that Mew is just, like, in his own right was created. Maybe, like, he is something that absorbed the DNA rather than, like, he was the first one.
Yeah.
Maybe he's, like, a creature that, like, was created by the trio, let's say. Or he was, like, just a blank slate that every Pokemon that exists, like, its DNA can be, like, absorbed by him, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they don't mention this in the Sinnoh myths, but maybe there's more to it that region is, like, kind of... oblivious to or ignorant to, like, yeah. For example, I mean, because if Mew is not a legend in that area of the world or something, maybe there's a part missing to that story, for example, because, like, yeah, like you said, Mew doesn't have very much of an appearance, you know, it's very plain looking, so it is pretty much like Blanka in Animal Crossing. How could you say it? What's you know those dolls that you could pose to be that you could draw from? It's almost like a blank. It's like a blank piece of paper.
I think the term would be a tabula rasa, which is a phrase meaning a blank sheet of paper, and it is from it you can make anything you want. And it kind of goes with the theory that everyone born is a blank slate, and it's all what the environment does that make us.
So maybe every Pokemon that Arceus made was originally a Mew, and he created everything based on his, like, structure of Mew or something.
Yeah, maybe, like, he just made Mews, and then, like, everyone, like, depending on where it went and where it lived, took a form.
Right, exactly.
And then, like, after it stayed that form, like, all right, this is how I live best in the forest... It got stuck that way. And maybe now, like, you know, there's only a few Mew left that haven't taken a permanent form and haven't said, I'm going to live this way. I'm going to take care of the trees. I'm going to live in a cave like this.
Interesting theory.
We're totally wrong, but I'm sure it's fun. Yeah,
I think it's a very good theory.
Yeah, like it's got a shot, you know. Any theory has a 1 in, like, 10 chance of being right. So, that's pretty much because of the Mew and Mewtwo thing. It's kind of interesting, though, since, like, Mew was just... Like, since they genetically enhance Mew, how different he becomes as Mewtwo, and, I don't know. It's just, I wonder what carries over exactly between the two, and, like, you know, what DNA they got rid of. Like, if he had the DNA of every Pokemon, why doesn't Mewtwo, like, you know, what do they take and leave out of Mewtwo? I'd just be curious to learn more about the pseudoscience that went into him. So, yeah, that's the first generation of Poké's legendary Pokémon.
And, like, as we said before, just like the legendary birds, we have the legendary beasts trio. And this leads me to point out, in all the games, the legends are in kind of groups, most of them. Like,
yes.
There's legendary trios, there's duos.
And they usually share a type with each other if they're in, like, a set.
Or like, an appearance of some sort.
Yeah. Like the legendary birds.
Right, they're all flying, obviously.
Yeah.
Or in the case of the beasts, they have, like, a similar appearance, kind
right.
of.
Right, yeah.
So let's see. First, let's talk about Raikou, the thunder cat / dog, whatever you want to call him. He's probably more of a cat.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one they would have called them the, like, legendary dogs if it wasn't for him being a tiger-y cat. So that's why they had to make it the beasts. Raikou, you know, he always reminded me of, like, a four-legged Electabuzz, personally.
Yeah.
Now, I remember him mostly from the Pokemon Chronicles series, when those Team Rocket elite characters try to actually capture him. You know, this is one of those episodes of this is one... See, there was a big power gap in the way I saw Raikou in that episode and what Entei was in that movie.
Well, that's the thing, though. Entei was actually a mirage the entire time. So that's an interesting thing. That Raikou was completely...
He was created
that
by
Entei was created...
By the unknown.
By the unknown through the imagination of that little girl. So,
that's true.
I realized that later. Because I thought the same thing. Then I read that. I was like, that makes sense. Yeah. So maybe that's why it's completely different.
And she did make all those other Pokemon that like kicked butt, even though they were like...
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, so weak.
So it's interesting to have it from that perspective, kind of.
Yeah. You know, but this is the generation we didn't play, right? I played
a bit of this, okay. But I mean, it's been quite a long time.
Okay.
So...
I like the legend, though, about Entei, that he... Every time a volcano is born... one is born. So, that's another
thing. Right.
Yeah, and so it says an Entei. So that's another one that we know there are more of than the one. And
Let me go into what each of them are based on. Raikou is based on the Raiju, a thunder demon of Japanese lore.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if I can find Entei as well. And as you said, yeah, it's the embodiment of volcanoes. And there's supposed to be one born every time a volcano is created. As far as the origin of Entei, there's actually no specific mythical creature that they say it's based on, but it resembles the male lion. They say.
I was actually thinking this is kind of interesting. His creation sounds very similar to another Pokemon's. Again, linking to something in the future, Heatran supposedly in the legend was created from like the magma of the earth when Dialga or Palkia,
probably both of them actually created
the earth in the time space when the earth was still molten. From that came, they said, the first Heatran, and that is like. Where it was born. It was like came out of the lava of the earth, and it was probably, it sounds like it's one of the first ever created. I wonder if that means that it has any relation to Entei, which it sounds like it has a very similar creation story or birth story.
And they actually say Suicune doesn't have a specific origin from like another mythical creature.
Now, just looking at these guys though, I mean, they do have very good like physical embodiments of their elements.
Absolutely. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, Entei just looks like a volcano with smoke.
And we didn't mention Suicune is the embodiment of the North Wind.
Hakuten. Just know that because of Final Fantasy Tactics, you lead the Hakuten, and I found out that means Northern Wind.
Yeah.
And you fight the Nanten.
The Zephyr.
And, I also like how Raikou looks like he has a cape on, like he's a superhero. It's just like a little gusty cape.
Yeah.
Like he's like, I'll save you now.
There's another duo, the yin and yang of Lugia and Ho-Oh.
Okay, yes. As we touched upon them before. Yes, and Ho-Oh is the one that supposedly, as we mentioned, created the...
the legendary beasts, right?
Legendary beasts. Now, the Lugia and Ho-Oh kind of dichotomy are very interesting because, like... Ho-Oh was the one we see in the very first episode of Pokemon.
Right, which is interesting. So, I mean, that was obviously created... I think it's safe to assume that Ho-Oh was actually created by the anime people, and then they adapted it to the video game.
Yeah, or, you know, it could off chance. I don't know, like, how they worked or how they connected. Like, you know, maybe someone left a note, like, you know, just put this Pokemon somewhere at the end, you know?
Yeah.
But, and he's the guardian of the skies, where Lugia is the guardian of the seas. And we kind of see this sky versus sea kind of, like, warfare. Just, like, different elements warfare in a lot of the generations like that. It doesn't seem like these master-level Pokemon are ever getting along very well.
No, they always have some sort of conflict.
I always thought Lugia was cooler, but Ho-Oh was our guy.
I always thought Ho-Oh was cooler, so, you know, there we go. they inspire conflict.
That's right. I'm going to get into a war with Joey now.
Yeah, we have to battle. All right. So Ho-Oh, as I said before, again, based on Phoenix, there are many things that represent it. Like rainbows, gold, fire, that sort of thing.
And it's interesting because, like, as we've seen this mentioned before, along with Mew, they say Ho-Oh only can be seen by a trainer with a pure heart.
Or it only appears for trainers with a pure heart.
Yes, he only appears for trainers with a pure heart. And they also mention that Mew will only be seen by trainers who have a pure heart and want to see him really badly. Apparently, that's the other stipulation on Mew.
Interesting.
Because, like, I guess he just stays invisible until whatever. Oh, I'm sorry. And also back to the Mew thing. Another thing I remember is since Mew takes any form he wants, they say a lot of people possibly have seen Mew and just don't know it. Because he's always walking around as any Pokemon he wants. So it's like... And, you know... Also, it's funny that the story involving Mew mentions South America is where they found him, which is one of the very few times they mention an actual world city or a world location, like, definable by our map. And they repeatedly mention South America.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's what the new Pokemon game will be. It'll be like... a region, because I mean, obviously, the four generations of this past the first four generations of Pokemon take place on like the four different islands of the main islands of Japan. I would imagine.
Yes, in fact, there was interesting on Celebi.net. They have a map. It looks like they've been working on where they put all the. We've seen another a pretty professional looking map of this too, but Celebi had their own little map where they just put all the. You know, region maps you got from the games together, and it just kind of looks, you know, you can kind of see how it resembles, you know, Asian geography.
And, interesting.
It matches up. And I think we've mentioned on another episode how we'd like to see it, like, you know, what would the American, Pokemon
Musclemon.
Oh, yeah, that's the Musclemon, right.
While we bring that up, I might as well mention our contest is ongoing, and your submissions are due by July 2nd. And we're going to announce the winners on July 3rd.
Awesome.
For the Musclemon competition / contest. Back to Ho-Oh and Lugia. Lugia is supposedly based on Raijin, a dragon who was the Shinto god of the sea and lived on the ocean's floor. But it still has a striking resemblance to like a Stegosaurus with like the little plates on his back and like its kind of face too a little bit.
And he was were both these masters here. Ho-Oh is just a flying type, correct?
Ho-Oh is flying fire, I believe. Actually,
oh, he is flying fire. Okay, so the other one is a flying water.
Yes, I believe that is true. Let me just double check here.
He's psychic flying.
Psychic flying, right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is interesting because he's supposed to be the guardian of the sea.
Yeah, you know, just think like, you know, I feel like they throw psychic on so many like, Pokemon just for the heck of it or legendaries.
Like, we're not sure what this one should be, so it's psychic.
And then for some reason, Palkia got water. I don't see how that happened. The water dragon.
Oh, right. Huh. That is weird, huh?
Yeah, and the other one was steel dragon, I thought it would be dark dragon. Yes, he's fire flying as Ho-Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing I just remember is, like, you know, that they never give the legends a gender. So...
That's not true. I mean, some of them in the later generations do have genders now. For example, Heatran could be male or female.
Oh, yes, that's true. Latios, yeah, those are specifically gendered.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, so many of these ones here, like, you know, like the Ho-Oh and stuff, aren't given a gender, and I'm curious if there's a reason why they decided not to do that. You know, not like, other than maybe, like, the breeding aspect of it, like, are they supposed to be, like, just, like, asexual reproducers who just, like, lay eggs at will? You know, is that just how it is? Are they, like, Nameks? From Dragon Ball Z that just spit eggs whenever they want. Dragon Ball Z fans get what I'm talking about.
So then of course there is one more legendary Pokemon in the second generation, which is one of I guess the Forest Guardian Pokemon.
Oh yes.
But I mean the main thing is it could travel through time.
That was the interesting so that'd be he was like the second coming of Mew.
Exactly. It's like in the same category as Mew because it has like a similar appearance in some ways. And It's interesting, though, that this Pokemon is dealing with time, and also, is it Dialga that's that has...
He's a creator of time.
He is the time.
Yeah, Dialga was the creator of time and Palkia space. And Celebi's like the more of like the guardian of like nature and the forest, or at least in the anime, the episode I remember is like, you know, when he takes... who is the other trainer? Richie, the one that has the other Pikachu?
Yes.
Yeah. And he takes Richie back in time so he can like set off events that save the forest from over-citification, you know, from the city. Because, like, you know, the people are building this huge city and it's just destroying the forest. And he takes Richie back in time to change things so that the people are, like, more nature-loving. And it's just kind of subtle. And it's also interesting because he's not, like... Most of the other legends do their thing because they control an element of mass power. Like, you know, Lugia or whatever would just, like, throw a tidal wave at something or cause mass devastation. Celebi isn't, like, super powerful in that respect. But he does this little clever thing to protect his forest using that time travel ability. Which is funny, though, because he doesn't seem to have any characteristics that would, like, other than... He doesn't seem to have any characteristics that would be time travel-y. Like, you know, he doesn't have, like, a clock theme or anything like that. Or he doesn't look like the spirit of time.
Right. Or, yeah, I mean, he kind of looks like a pixie or a fairy of some sort.
Yeah. And he's psychic. He's grass. I guess, you know, again, they threw the psychic thing in there. But it's just, you know, they just decided. It seemed more like there's something they just chose to give him for the sake of good television.
The Tinkerbell Pokemon. Yeah.
But, you know, he's one of those, you know, he's not super powerful, but he has this cool little ability that makes him useful for, episodic danger. It's interesting to note, though, that since he, since he is a time traveler, he could, you know, exist anywhere, anytime, so there could be hundreds of thousands of them. They just decide to live all in 1 year. It's like they all go back to 1965 and relive it over and over again.
Celebi is stuck in a time loop.
Let's do the time warp again.
All right. That concludes Generation 2. Now we have...
We have to mention that he does have his own movie that we never got to see.
Right, yeah. We still have to do that.
We'll have to cover that one.
Suicune's in that one, too. One of my favorite legendary beasts.
Yes.
Okay. Generation 3, we could start off by talking about the legendary golems. There's really not much known about their origins, I hear. Like, I've been like reading up on them, and there's really not too much. I mean, Reggie Rock, Reggie Ice, and Reggie Steel are the legendary golems, and...
I feel like they have their own... Like, they decided, like, these guys should have their own kind of, like, Pokemon-inspired mythology that they're only, like, kind of, like, hinting at.
Right, exactly.
Reggie Gigas had an interesting little story I heard, though, that he made himself out of, like, a glacier, some, like, rocks and magma. And just, and like, I'm like, that's just a cool image. Like,
yeah.
I am nothing. And he just, like, somehow scoops the Phantom Hand and iceberg. This is my body. This is my blood. And, like, he just throws himself together like that.
That is pretty interesting, yeah.
And it does remind me of, because I might have mentioned before, oh, I let my computer die because I forgot to plug it in. I mentioned to Joey before the show, I started talking, because a lot of the Pokemon I researched, I found a link to like Hebrew mythology and the Torah. And it's funny because Reggie Gigas struck me, even though they didn't link this in any of the stories I read, but he reminded me most of the story of, I think it was Og, I think it is pronounced, who was like just this massive like barbarian who created, like, you know, like a nation, and when he died, his blood became the rivers, his hair became the forests, and every part of him became part of the earth. And it kind of sounds like the opposite of what this guy is, where he's like, all right, I'm going to take the earth and make it my body, and I will take the rivers of lava and make it my blood. And so the other three Reggies, though... you know, they seem to have kind of like a Egyptian quality to them, is the way I look at it. And there's my computer booting. They just have kind of like that, you know, and that's like a kind of like mythology that they don't have much of in this game, but I feel like it's something that these guys, because like first off they're Reggies, right, which is like king, and they're all like kind of found hidden in like tombs, you know, and I just I feel like they kind of have an Egyptian guardian, almost like what the Sphinxes were.
Yeah, well, in the eighth movie, they're the protectors of the Tree of Beginning. But again, yeah, their history in general is pretty much shrouded in mystery.
Tree of Beginning, that sounds like Yggdrasil from Norse mythology. Interesting, interesting. But yeah, again, these guys don't seem like they have too much, you know, because these aren't even like major like legendaries. They're not like end game bosses. Mm-hmm, they're just kind of like, you know, like Reggie Gygax is the most impressive because, you know, you have to bring all the other Reggies together with you. But, you know, Reggie Gygax doesn't have like any huge like plot involved with him, really. Mm-hmm. You know, so I wonder if there's something more they're gonna, you know, bring out with him.
Actually, I think it's in the 11th movie where Reggie Gygax kind of appears.
Okay.
A Reggie Gigas appears, because apparently there's more than one of them now.
Yeah, we know there's a lot of those Reggie Ice and all those things, because they showed up all over in that Mew episode. All three Reggies were just in that episode, in the movie with Lucario.
Okay, I didn't see that one yet.
Okay, yeah, like they're just there, and like people are kind of like, oh, it's a Reggie Ice, let's get out of here. Like, it's kind of scary, but it's not like, whoa, yeah. Reggie Ice. Like, you know, it seems to me like even like Articuno and those birds were like, whoa, it's that legendary bird. These things are like, ah, oh, crud.
It's one of those. No,
it's one of those. They're strong and annoying. Not like they are legendary. We should go call the newspapers.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference.
Okay. So there's another duo of legendaries called the Eon Pokemon. And those are, of course, Latios and Latias, the twin dragons, one male, one female. And is there any kind of relation between them and Lugia?
You know, nothing was stated, but yeah, they definitely do have this similar aesthetic to them. They kind of have a similar shape. We know these guys breed, and we've seen it in the movie. You know, we've seen two generations or so, or they spoke of three generations of the movie. You know, it's also kind of interesting, though. These Pokemon seem almost, and I wonder if this goes for all legendaries, but these guys seem, for all intents and purposes, immortal. Like, they live until they are killed in some sort of sacred battle or something like that. Like, Reggie Gygax, we know, is like he's been down in whatever tomb for thousands of years. Like, he's definitely, like, nigh immortal. And, you know, Lugia and Palkia have been battling out. I don't know if there's more than one of them, but, like, they mentioned how they, like, created the other lesser ones. But, you know, and Mewtwo has been around long enough for us to see if he could age or not. But I'm just curious because, like, you know, all these guys don't seem to have any age. We've never seen, like, an old legendary or, like, you know, anything like that. So I'm just curious if that's like another characteristic of legends.
Mm-hmm. So in the movie they have a strong link to this Soul Dew that we went over in one of our former reviews. And Latias is supposed to be highly, highly intelligent and understanding of human speech. These are straight from her Pokedex entries, and she's supposed to be highly sensitive to the emotions of people, and if it senses hostility, it like ruffles its feathers and that sort of thing. So it's interesting, and it could telepathically communicate with people.
They also turn into people,
right? In the movie, I don't know if that's necessarily something they mentioned in the games. But
yeah. It's one of those things. Like, did they just make it for the plot?
Yeah,
or is it like
seems
a
like
thing?
It, but. For Latios, though, Latios, even in the games, has the ability to make its foe see an image of what it has seen or imagines in its head. So that, I mean, that's something, well, they kind of changed for the movie again for plot, but that they do reference that ability.
Yeah. It's kind of a creepy power, though. It's like, you know, you can think of some messed up things to mess up your opponents.
And it's also another highly intelligent Pokemon.
And this is another case of a legendary that has a gender, as we mentioned before. This is like one of the rare situations, and it has only one gender each. So, similar to Nidoran, Nidorino, Nidorina, it's like the other Pokemon that, like, its species is its gender.
Yeah.
You know, it's like almost an oxymoron to, like, you know, to have a different species be each gender, because species aren't supposed to breed with each other.
I think they realize their mistake later on. But yeah. Maybe it's not a different species necessarily as much as it is there are stark differences between the genders of Pokemon.
Well, what's it called? We do know different species of Pokemon can breed anyway, you know, since, like, you know, you could take any two of the same type and they just do it, you know, like a Haunter and a Banette can breed probably, you know, it's just interesting. They decided, let's make this one specifically feminine and this one will be the masculine of the two. And they'll just have a little story. And again, these guys weren't, like, godlike powerful. They were just kind of, like, powerful, rare, and mysterious. And that's what made them interesting, which I'm fine with, you know?
Yeah, they don't necessarily govern any, like, anything that's, I don't know, any kind of, like, natural forces or anything like that. They're just, they're like, what, psychic dragons?
Yes, psychic dragons, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So we've gone over both a trio and a duo from this Generation 3. That leads us to our second trio.
All right. Yeah, this is the one I was really interested in looking up. These guys are pretty cool.
Right. This is the other trio that had to do with, a lot with Hebrew.
Yes. This is lore, huh? Yes, the super ancient Pokemon, Kyogre, Groudon, and Rayquaza.
And as I mentioned before, they're very highly weather-related.
Yes.
And they have to do with the balance of nature. And this, they're very clearly governing different aspects of the weather.
And they actually, interestingly enough, work this into the plot of the games and anime. Groudon's job, like, Groudon exists to create the continents, and he, like, spreads them out. And conversely, Kyogre's job is to spread the oceans and create that. And that's why Team Aqua is trying to get Kyogre to make more water for their business, and Groudon to make, if by Team Magma, to make more ground for their business. And Rayquaza, which is kind of the balancer, who kind of, like, just says, hey, stop fighting! Chill out! I already got all the sky in the world. It doesn't matter what you two do, but chill. You know, that's, like, kind of...
Another Pokemon that's like the protector of the skies.
Yes, and it's funny because he's like another peacekeeper Pokemon. Whereas like they had the trio of birds. When they go crazy, Lugia steps in. Yeah,
exactly.
And here we got Rayquaza. Now Rayquaza was interesting in his story because I read basically all he does is fly around the world, and then when he's tired, he's like takes a break on Sky Pillar and just kind of chills there. And it gets his energy and just goes flying around again. Like, he's just all over the world. He has no place to chill. But as for the other... Now, all three of these... Now, the way I said these beasts are Hebrew myth or Old Testament, which is pretty much the same thing. Kyogre is... even though his shape has been changed, Kyogre is based on the Leviathan, which was creator, which is Lord of the Sea. Groudon, which was the Behemoth.
Says here that Rayquaza has similarities to Ziz.
The Ziz.
It's Kyogre that's the Leviathan.
That's what I said.
Oh, you did. You were describing Kyogre. I thought you were going into Rayquaza.
Kyogre, Leviathan, Groudon, the Behemoth.
Right.
S, and Rayquaza, the Ziz. And all three of these had, like, Groudon was, like, the beast of the, you know, Lord of the Earth. And Rayquaza was the ruler of the skies and guardian of birds. Apparently, if he didn't exist, birds would, like, get killed more.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And here's the creepy part. Apparently, at the end of the world, the Behemoth and the Leviathan and the Ziz will be served at the final feast of the world. They will finally be killed because man will have destroyed the lords of nature. And while he is feasting upon them, the world will fall apart around them.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Man.
But these guys are really cool because these guys, like, all look really impressive and different. They aren't... They don't have a theme in either appearance. If their theme is what they do and their mythology. Yeah, and I like that best.
They're a pretty cool trio. They're very interesting, and they're all unique. If there's any like similarity in their appearance, they all have like kind of like crazy lines running through
them. Yes, that's true. But, and they have the similar abilities where Grodon makes sunny weather, Kyogre makes rainy weather, and Rayquaza gets rid of weather.
And also interesting is that their colors, red, green, and blue.
Ah, yes. Very true. But yeah, no, that was the first time I saw some like real deep like mythology behind them, and I was really kind of like pulled in by that. And after them... We came to the... I guess this is kind of like just some miscellaneous like legends that were in these games. Jirachi.
Right.
The Steel Psychic. He looks like a festive kind of guy. Like, he's dressed like... He looks like a shooting star. Like, he's like has trailing little beams. Like, little, like, you know...
That's true, huh?
Yeah, he looks like a star. He has those little trailing things. And those little... tags on him are like wish tags. Like, kids in Japan will like hang those out their window if they see shooting stars, or if there's like a meteor shower, you write your wish down on a tag like that.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to like post it either on a tree, or some people just hang it out their windows, and supposedly the star will like grab the wish and make it come true.
Interesting. Wishing upon a star, huh?
Yep. Goes across countries.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting thing we found out about Jirachi today. That little line on his belly is an eye that he just doesn't open often. It's creepy.
That is kind of weird, huh? It's true eye.
Yeah. And he has little, like, blue tattoos of triangles under his eyes that look like little teardrops. They're very small. You can only see them, like, if you look closely, but they're really kind of cool. But yeah, so he all is, like, themed around the wishes. He's, like, you know, he learns wish. And actually, it's just kind of funny. This one move, his like main move, his signature move that he learns is Doom Desire, which just sounds so antithesis to what he is. Doom Desire. It's kind of creepy. Anyway, he has a very childish personality, and he wakes up for 1 week every like 1,000 years. He's awake for 7 days, and he just goes around granting wishes.
Is it granting one wish?
I think he grants wishes.
Okay.
Yes. During this time, Jirachi has the power to grant wishes. Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Then he just goes to sleep for another 1K year.
Nice. All right. Mew and Jirachi are in the same category, I would probably put... Mew and Celebi, then Jirachi is probably also in that kind of category in shape and...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's another hard to get one too.
Mm-hmm, right.
I had to poach him. Here's a very unique one coming up here.
Yes, Deoxys, the virus, the viral Pokemon, if you will, the DNA Pokemon.
Uh huh.
One of the first form changing Pokemon.
Yes. He is also like definitely the most alien, crazy looking one. I mean. He's, you know, they say he's alien and virus, or he was possibly, like, designed in space somehow, which would mean there's Pokemon, like, on other planets, possibly.
Maybe Dialga.
Ooh, yes.
Palkia created him.
Or maybe, yeah. Maybe, like, you know, there's, like, another race of Pokemon trainers, another galaxy, yeah, yeah. And this thing, like, just flipped out. Now, he looks evil, but I don't think he is. Like, in the movie, I understand that, like, he gets into a brawl with Rayquaza, but only because Rayquaza's, like, really territorial. Like, he only has that one sky tower to rest on. So anyone who gets near there, he flips out.
Yeah.
And so Deoxys gets there, and they start a fight, and then later on he realizes, oh, wait, yeah.
So apparently there's more than one Deoxys.
Oh, yeah? I thought he just, like, fell from space or something.
Or at least a second one. Looks like it. Battle with Rayquaza.
I guess it wouldn't be too hard for, like, you know, DNA to multiply.
Yeah, exactly.
Clone, I guess it would be. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I can't even imagine, like, you know, he feels like another, like, unique one, but I guess, you know, it makes sense that he would change around. And yes, so he, now it's also...
It says here, the DNA of a space virus underwent a sudden mutation upon exposure to a laser beam and resulted in deoxys. The crystalline organ on his this Pokemon's chest appears to be its brain.
Oy. And then he was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah, and he shoots webs from his arms.
And he got electrocuted from a socket, and now he has superpowers. I think it's also interesting to note that he changes his form by touching those meteors mm-hmm. in the game. And so I wonder if that means that, like, he has some sort of link, kind of like Superman was affected both positively and negatively by pieces of Krypton, which was the kryptonite, which was, like, fragments from exploded Krypton. So, I wonder if, like, those rocks are, like, also pieces of whatever planet or place he came from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're probably pieces of the meteor that... Yeah. Apparently, this alien virus was supposed to be part of... inside of a meteor or something that came from space.
They were, like, hiding it. Like, all right, this is creepy. Get it out of here. Throw it into a sun. Okay, that makes sense then.
Wow, the shiny Deoxys is pretty cool, huh? It's like all yellow, a completely different color.
Yeah, I like that. The only one other than that that has like a really cool color is the golden Arceus, I think. I think that looks like the coolest for a shiny. But yeah, the yellow version of him looks really different.
Yeah. Alright, so again, yeah, supposed to be based on DNA or, deoxyribonucleic acid. Yes. And or deoxys. Yeah. That's where the name comes from.
It's interesting because, like, I think he's like another one of the... He's legendary but not mythical. I guess I'm going to define him like that. He's legendary in terms of his storyline and stats, but he is not like a god of anything.
Right.
He is not in children's books in the world. He is not responsible for any forces of nature. He just is something cool and very rare. So that's how he becomes a legendary.
So is that all of Generation 3 now?
I think that is. So growing on to Generation 4.
With a total of whopping 14 legendary Pokemon. The most of any of the generations.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to mention that this game specifically, like, it's very detailed about how a lot of the legend in this game are governing various forces of nature or human nature, even.
Yeah. You know, like, we kind of, like, didn't have too much to say about some of the earlier ones because they just kind of made them. They probably weren't thinking that, you know, the game needed that, like, level. But now they're definitely, like, in this, all right, depth storyline. We want, like, backbone story to this world. We want to make a universe, not just a game with some cool monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that brings us now to the fairy trio, or the Mirage Pokemon, of Uxie, Mesprit, and Azelf.
Yes.
Now, alone with their names, I've discovered quite a few little things. Their name meaning... Oh, and here's a general thing I found about legendaries overall, I should have mentioned earlier. It was mentioned that making the names for the legendaries is a lot harder than anyone else because... They want the names to be the same worldwide.
Right.
Not translated. There's a few exceptions because they had to, but they want, like, Arceus in English, Arceus in German, Arceus in Japan.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, they...
Like, we. That's why they made it we. Yeah. Because that's, like, easy to say in very many different languages.
All right, yeah. So, Uxie, Mesprit, and Azelf were actually somewhat changed, but the... So, their names are kind of plays on Pixie, Spirit, and Elf... And their
interesting.
And their beginnings are you, me, and us.
Interesting. Okay. Uh-huh. And they are supposed to govern or create the spirit of the world, and they were birthed directly from Arceus. So maybe one of the blank canvases, or three of the blank Mew canvases, were turned into Uxie, Mesprit, and Azelf, and specifically. Uxie embodies knowledge, Mesprit embodies emotion, and Azelf embodies will.
Now, this is kind of this is an interesting note, because these three things come from the Japanese Oh, they're called the... I forget what they're called, but there are three gifts. These are like the most sacred things in Japan that only the emperor and like some of his closest priests are allowed to even see.
Uh-huh.
But there is basically the mirror of Yata, the sword Kusanagi, and... oh, sorry, I can't remember what the last thing is, but they are represent the knowledge, the emotion, the will, and they are given to the emperor as gifts to embolden him in those three things.
The Triforce of Pokemon.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like the Triforce. It's, you know, like the power, the knowledge, and the wisdom. And it really is just like that. And let me see if I can bring up something here. Their colors are also like the primary colors of the of, you know, red, blue, and yellow that make everything else up. Mm-hmm. My theory about them is where like Palkia and Dialga made like the physical universe. I feel like these guys are responsible for like life or like human and right. Pokemon, like, yeah, the soul. These things gave to that the soul of everything. And
the Holy Spirit of the Church of the Original One.
Yes. I was, yeah, that was a great commercial we did back then. What was also really cool is that, now I wonder, I want to see if anyone could, like, if you look at the, when you pick these guys up in that in their lakes, they all have these weird symbols. Oh my god, the sound. Congratulations, I won an iPod. They all have these weird, like, insignias in the in their like caves, and no one knows exactly what these mean yet. So I really think this is like a mystery that'd be cool if someone like looks at them. Maybe you could put the three symbols together and it makes like the Triforce. I don't know. I just want to, you know, I just like that's like one of the cool little mysteries behind them.
And they each have like a like jewels in their head. I wonder what those signify, if anything.
Yeah, they have the tails.
And I like how they are very close to Mew in like in appearance too, because that almost further proves my theory that Mew is the blank canvas that Arceus created Pokemon with.
Yes,
because I mean, if these are some of the first ones he created, then it would make sense that they're very similar in appearance to Mew. Almost.
They're also all exactly the same type. They're all psychic type.
Right, they're all psychic once
which
again.
Which kind of makes them like the one of the less usable Pokemon, since like...
True.
You know, mob people don't want... I mean, I would use like one or two of them, you know, like... Oh, and the Japanese thing I was saying before, it was the... yes, the mirror of Yata, the Yasaki no Magatama... And I don't know what a Magatama is. That's the thing else. And the Kusanagi sword. But they are called the Imperial Regalia of Japan. And they are the things that... And it looks like the Magatama is like a necklace. There are even no pictures of those three things. Like, you can't... No one's allowed to have seen them except for the emperor. So you can't even have a picture of it. They've only have pictures of, like, the boxes they brought them to the emperor in.
Wow.
That's it. But, yeah. So, anyway... these three guys are one of my favorite myths because of that. And they have, like, we read one of those great myths about them hiding underneath and diving deep under the lakes.
Right.
And, you know, I like that one of the, like, they're the guardians of, like, the town. Like, one of them guards Twidleaf, and that's why he's, like, kind of, like, the closest to our hero in Platinum or Pearl. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's those guys there.
Okay, the next the second trio of Generation 2, or Generation 4, that is the legendary dragons. Sometimes some people call them. They're also called the legendary titans in some Nintendo official literature. And these, are, of course, are Dialga, Palkia, and Giratina, the mascots for Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum. And basically, they govern time, space, and like the anti-space. So. They have the ability to warp the fabric of reality, and they supposedly created Earth and govern that sort of thing. Once again, Arceus created them directly and created them to create matter. They battle for all of eternity in a different dimension, according to the movies. And let's see here.
Now we know he created Dialga for time, Palkia for space.
And apparently Giratina controls antimatter, which is supposed to be the antithesis of the material world, which Dialga and Palkia created together.
So it's basically Giratina's like the equal of the other two, I'm guessing, since it takes the two of them to fight
him.
Yeah. Okay. I could buy that, I guess. But it says that they battle eternally, so it's like there are a lot of stories in mythology of like they created these gods that just like since they're all immortal, they just fight, but they can never die, and constantly.
And if one of them starts winning, that kind of like throws things off. If the balance is broken, then the fabric of time and space start to unravel, basically, which is what the Darkrai movie is about. I understand. Mm. So, I guess that's a perfect segue into our lunar Pokemon, or legendary Pokemon, which are Darkrai and Cresselia. Cresselia, obviously, very obviously, represents the crescent moon.
And, Darkrai representing the new moon. And, these two don't seem to be, like, direct combatants, but they seem to, like, try to offset each other. Where, like, Darkrai goes around and gives you creepy dreams that you will never get out of your head. Or nightmares, rather. Cresselia goes around healing people of those dreams. And apparently, like, childhood traumas. Yeah. Or psychic mental scarring she can heal you of. Which would be great if I could just forget the first 10 years of my life. Thank you.
Cresselia, come to Casey.
Cresselia is one of those Pokemon you have to catch right when you, like, you just by running around. Like, after you see it in that island you go to, it, like, is just on the map.
It's basically running around the map.
Yeah.
Huh? It's one of those.
It's one of those guys. We call them pain in the butts.
And, Darkrai in the game, obviously, you had to either get it from one of the Nintendo events, or there's an item that lets you get it, the member's card, but that was never released here officially.
No, I was thinking, though, it's funny about Darkrai. It's just, like, how... like, because Cresselia was, like, you know, kind of easy, if not, like, right, everyone got it. But Darkrai was made out to be, like, almost super legendary. Mm-hmm. Like, Darkrai was the one, because, like, people, like...
That's just kind of sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, people, like, you couldn't get him for a while, except for in Japan, and people were, like, talking about him never coming here, and everyone, like, that was the Pokemon to boast about that you got, you know? Yeah. And, he's great. He's good. He has a cool, unique ability, but I just feel like he was, like, a little overrated for a while. I think that's just because he's so cool-looking. I think that was his main thing.
Yeah.
But he is on, like, the level of, like... You know, like
his moves are pretty powerful, I must say, though. Like, in putting you to sleep, and then, like, while you're asleep, doing crazy damage. You know?
Yeah.
So the next group of Pokemon aren't necessarily members of any kind of trio or duo. They're just kind of random, in some ways. Beginning with Manaphy, the Prince of the Sea, if you will. No, Manaphy's not the movie you saw, but it's interesting. Yeah, it must be hatched from an egg that has the power to swap hearts of people and Pokemon, putting them into different bodies.
Oh, it's another fucking wacky, crazy powers for good episodes.
Yeah, for plot devices. Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, Manaphy was featured in the ninth movie, and
isn't like I think May gets him, or like she's like caring for him in that movie or something like that.
Is it just me, or is like Manaphy the most underwhelming legendary Pokemon?
Like, you know what, it's funny, like even Celebi and Jirachi both seem like guys I would maybe use in a party. Manaphy doesn't impress me even that way. I feel like he'd be a liability. Even though his stats I think are equal in terms of average. And then Fionn, which is just created as a way to, you know, hide one more legend in the game somewhere, you know?
Right, by breeding a Manaphy...
with either another Manaphy or Ditto.
With another Fionn also is possible.
Oh, yes.
That's how you have to breed a Fionn. So, and technically, Pokemon.com revealed it that is a legendary, but although that's been debated whether or not it actually is.
Yeah.
Because, it's kind of like, it's kind of interesting because it's like, you know, there must be some way to make a Fionn into a Manaphy or something. But
maybe someday in the future.
Yeah.
Which would be weird, because then, like, you just have too many Manaphys. Like, people just breed it, basically. Unless it's, like, a one-time use item that makes, like, a good Manaphy. Like, mana 3.
Mana 3.
I don't know.
So, that's a weird exception to the rules, this Manaphy.
It is the weakest. You know. I'd have to... It is the weakest of the legends.
Oh, Fionn, sure.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I hear Fionn, the way they got that was they took the I in the iPhone and just moved it past the PH. And it's the Steve Jobs Pokemon. That's the type. Right? That governs the cool gizmos.
Moving on. I think we already talked about Regigigas.
Quite a bit, yeah, with the legendary.
So I gotta say, I do think he's one of the coolest ways to unlock, you know, getting three guys that were difficult for me to get because I didn't play the previous generation. So waking up Regigigas was kind of a chore, but it was really fun because I had to go on a quest in real life to get the three keys. And I like that. I wish there would be more things like that, you know, doing some sort of cool... I don't know, whatever. It'd be awesome if they made like a Pokemon with the iPhone kind of app or like a GPS where it like either knows where you are, like says, all right, you have to only catch this Pokemon above 10,000 feet above sea level. Yeah. Not 10,000, maybe like, you know, 500 feet. That seems more reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, or you have to be facing north.
Yeah, there are so many things they could do with the iPhone because it has like so many things now because like it has the compass, the GPS, the ambient light sensors.
You know what's cool?
Microphones.
You know what I saw that was cool? There was a game you could play with people on the map, and let's say like letters pop up on the map, and you have to run there in real life to like grab the letter on the map.
Weird.
And everyone could be like looking at the same letter, like it's synchronized. Like, oh, who runs to get that first? Imagine they did that with Pokemon. Like, oh, there's a little Manaphy on my map. First one to run there on that spot with an iPhone gets a Manaphy. Or gets the fight Manaphy.
That would be freaking super cool if they did something like
that. It's hiding in the bushes. You're scaring people. Okay, let's move. Heatran! I think I spoke of him too, but he's the one who comes out. He was born out of the lava when the universe was first created. Yes, the lava and magma pooled together to become the first living Heatran. Now, this is kind of weird that it's like, you know, just like when Pokemon, like all the other ones come from something creating it or whatever. This is just like living embodiment of lava. I'm just curious how that, like, you know, comes to be. Like, you know, where these monsters, I guess that's just what it is. They're just monsters, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's very confusing.
Maybe a Mew got caught in the lava.
Yeah, if it goes to that thing. Yeah. Who knows?
All right. Another weird one and like another forest guardian type of thing, Shaymin, which is prominently featured in the most recent movie, 11, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The Gratitude Pokemon.
What a lame name.
Yeah.
But I think his sky form, is another form. Yeah, sky form is cool looking. Like he looks so girly and in his regular form, but when he becomes like, you know, his sky heroic form, I'm like yeah, he's kind of cool. I can dig Shaymin. I can use him in my party.
It's funny. Shaman's kind of in a class all its own. But it's supposed to be like purifying. Every area that it goes purifies. I wonder if there is a Pokemon that they'll announce in the future that is it's yin to its yang, sort of, that corrupts everything or makes chaos out of everything. Be interesting.
You know, actually, it's important that you mention that the chaos. When we talk about like the creation of the universe in these games, it's important to note that, like, you know, especially in Western cultures, you're used to thinking the creation of the universe, there was nothing, and then something came out of that.
Yeah.
But in Eastern mythology, and especially like Chinese like creation myths, there's usually chaos, which is everything. Like, every inch of infinity had random things. Like, just every possible conceivable thing existed in total, utter chaos.
Yeah.
And then something came out of there randomly that was able to make order. Which is what I think Arceus is supposed to have been.
Right.
Like, this one thing.
It's just like, from this chaos, an egg was born.
Right.
We go into this in depth, by the way, in our past mythology episode.
Right.
But we'll go into particularly about Arceus this time around. So,
yeah.
There was nothingness, but there was also chaos. And from this was born an egg, which became Arceus, the original one.
And basically, he's the one who said, all right, random crazy stuff, back off. I am making a circle of order, which could be like nothing at first, but then I'll make specifically a planet or this and, you know, work its way out. And so that's also how, like, one of the Exalted World worked. It was like there was all those chaos creatures, and then, like, a couple of them said, you know, let's make some order out of this chaos. And they cleared a circle where there could be no chaos and said, all right, let's make a continent in here, mm-hmm. and then we're going to make a world. And then the chaos is still around it.
Right.
And it's trying to get in, but they're like, stay back.
Yeah.
We're keeping order here. I want this place calm and simple. Yeah, so that's, you know, that's just an important thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about, like, the creation of this universe and how all these things came to be. So it's quite possible there were, like, Shaman and Heatran just floating around in that chaos. But, you know, Arceus and his descendants are the ones who said, all right, put this guy here. I want him to be the Heatran or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I've already kind of jumped into Heatran, but let's go just touch upon that. They say Shaman shows up only before people or like a show or were giving thanks or something like that. Well, he only shows up in the games after Oak and the other character you don't pick give their thanks to you for like basically saving the world. And other than that, yeah, supposedly he only shows up before people who show great gratitude for nature and that's you know, another thing like the Mew and Jirachi or and Serebii. They only show up before people. Oh, and Ho-Oh, who only show up before people of pure hearts,
mm-hmm. yeah.
who have some sort of intent that it likes. All right, and yeah, the big Kahuna.
Right, of course, Arceus, which we were going into.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just born of this nothingness, an egg, and
I guess, like, you know, we can't talk about him without having we talked about him. We can't talk about any of the other legendaries without going back to Arceus. So we've
right.
really
we've talked
about
him the entire time. Yeah,
so it's like impossible to have not talked about him. So we pretty much said most of what there is to say about him, other than, you
like,
know.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, he is the god of the Pokemon universe.
Yeah. And he created everything, I guess, like humans and Pokemon alike. And now he's just kind of like slumbering away. And the top of his tower, and can be woken up with an azure flute. It's just kind of interesting, you know. He would pick like some place in the regular world, you know, that's someone could find, I guess, and you know, wake him up, kind of like he's like a god on Mount Olympus, and you know, he's just chilling out.
Two interesting things. First off, that he embodies all the different types through
yes.
the different plates.
That is correct. Which makes me suspect the plates, I guess, were all once like one thing, and like were somehow either he did it or wherever were shattered into different pieces.
Right, I think it's something to do with we reread the you know the captions on the back of them in the last episode. I think they had something to do with like. Original matter or something like that.
Mm.
Oh,
and yes, also there was the his Chinese myth that he sounds very similar to was either Pujin or let me see if I can find on here. It was some one of the Chinese mythologies. He's very similar to the Chinese mythology of the creation of the world. There was instead of a you know horse-like very beautiful thing, I gotta say, with this crazy, like, you know, wheel of gold around it, was a very ugly, ogre-ish giant man. And this ogre-ish giant man basically is the one who, like, with his axe, cut yin and yang in half and created the order. And that's kind of similar to what Arceus did. Instead of, like, you know, creating his two halves of the universe, he took what was yin and yang just in the universe and cut it in half to make yin and yang, two separate things.
Yeah.
And then he basically turned his body into the earth, and it's kind of the opposite of the guy. He turned his body into the continent. His hair became this part again, and I think it was Yujin or something. But yeah, the creation myth of China was very similar to Arceus. And
interesting.
Yeah.
And so they have they have a few different theories on where they get the name. One of the theories is that it comes from the word arch, which is highest, and deus, which is a Greek word for God. And also, it might have a root in the Latin word arcanus, which means secret or sacred mystery. Both work pretty well.
Yeah,
I must say.
I'm not fond of the Arcus Zeus one.
Yeah,
it's like Arcus,
archaic Zeus or something.
No, not working for me. But he is so like original looking, and you know, if there is a god of Pokemon, like. I imagine being so hard to pick a character design for, like, the original being of something.
Yeah.
And I really feel like they nailed it with this thing. It is so majestic and deified, and it's not, like, any cliche at all. It's not like, you know, a god in terms of, like, you know, old wizened man with beard, or, like, you know, it's not something over simple, like it was just, like, a ball of light or something like that. It is this complex, really awesome looking thing that just exudes glory and power, and I gotta give him a hand for like this design. It's really cool, and I've never seen anything like him before.
Word. So I think that pretty much does it for all like the actual legendary Pokemon. It's interesting. Doesn't Arceus actually have like the highest base stats pretty much? Like 120 and everything?
The only thing is, like, he can be beaten in a stat by a...
Like Deoxys strength
form. Deoxys forms can beat him in a stat, and so can Shedinja beat him in speed.
Interesting.
That's the only other thing that's, like, faster than him or whatever. But other than that, he is, like, the top base stat
of many of the stats. Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Probably the highest, like, when you add them all together.
Yep, totally, definitely highest all together. He is the number one. Nothing. And I think his main move is Judgment, which is whatever type he is.
Right. And isn't he, we're calling him he, but it might not even be a he necessarily.
It is.
Isn't it the only legendary Pokemon that is normal type?
Regigigas is normal.
Is Regigigas?
Regigigas is normal type. Yeah. But even beyond that, he's the only one that could be question mark type, theoretically, even though there's no question mark.
Sure, yeah.
They said they only made the question mark type just to like prevent any like game crashing bugs in case someone did something where they would try to tear in his type to that.
Probably there for the sake of consistency, because they need that. They have that slot for a question mark for the curse attack. Is it the curse attack?
Yeah, curse has it. Yeah.
Theoretically he could be question mark. But it's interesting that they actually bothered putting the artwork for that in there.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's just a matter of something like preventing a crash or whatever. But awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've gone over now many of the Sinnoh myths, the creation myths. We've gone over the backgrounds of many of these legendary Pokemon. Now, in a future episode, you can expect to hear us talk about some more of the myths that surround these legendary Pokemon.
So, and we'll probably follow that up with another Fortnite question of the send in your own myths, like we did last time. We got some great ones last time.
That was fun. That was a fun contest. I do remember that. But speaking of Fortnite questions, our current one is, what is your favorite monster battler game and why? So voicemail us your answers. I strongly encourage voicemails anyway. And we might actually have to put that off 1 week, because next week we're doing our second anniversary episode. So we might have to make it a little bit more than a fortnight this time around, 3 weeks. All right. So give us a call, 206-202-4575.
Email at palettetribune@gmail.com.
And you could...
Twitter!
We have a Twitter.
Yeah.
That's twitter.com/palettetribune. Mm-hmm. We also have a...
snail mail.
We have snail mail, yeah.
You can find that address on the website.
Sure. Under contact all the way on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And our website, of course, palettetribune.com. Look for information about TPT Day on there. Lots of cool stuff going on and huge announcements. And you heard it here first. Announcements about TPT 3.0.
I hope we heard it here first. I mean, someone else told you about our plans that we didn't even know until...
Or you heard it on this episode first. How about that?
Okay. All right, dudes. Thanks for listening.
Yes. Yes, thank you very much for listening. We do appreciate it.
All right. Until the next time.
Graciously.
Graciously. Stay out of the tall grass.